Well, thank you very much. You'll be pleased to know that my speech is not going to be as long as either one of these last two that you see. Thank you for being here, Richard. And Ken, thank you for those kind words. And I would like to introduce the single most important person in this room, my son, Spencer, who's right back over here, the finest lawyer in Travis County. Invariably someone always asks me, so what was your funniest time in elected politics, and one of them has to do with Richards, who did the hotline bit, but the one that almost ties it, in case any of you are familiar with Jasper, Texas, involves the very first fundraiser I ever had in politics. And one of my roommates from Jasper, he had never done any of these things before, and he had a fundraiser, and he had about 6 kegs of beer and about full bar and all this kind of stuff. Well, I didn't know you wasn't supposed to have all of that stuff in East Texas, that you did that drinking privately and not out in public. And so this little lady came up to me and she said, I won't be voting for you. This was at the fundraiser. And I said, well, why is that? And she said, well, all this whiskey. Here in East Texas, we don't flaunt whiskey and beer. So we do this stuff if we must, in the privacy of our homes. And we sure don't do it out here where everybody's falling down the steps and whatnot with you and your college roommate. And I said, well, I'm sorry. And she said, this is just not something that we've cottoned to in the Baptist Church and all of the folks here in East Texas. And I said, and I should have kept my mouth shut, but I didn't. I said, ma'am, I have read the Bible 9 or 11 times. And I do remember that particular part in the Bible at the wedding of Cana where Jesus, his own self, took perfectly good water, turned it into wine, and they sat around and drank it all day long. And if I'm lying, I'm dying, this is what her response. She looked right at me and she said, yeah, and I'd have thought a lot more of him if he wouldn't have done that. And so for all you heathens back here drinking this beer and wine and carrying on, God bless you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with so many people who made such a big difference in the state of Texas. And by doing so, made such a big difference in this country. You re-energized people who thought that being a Democrat was a lost cause. You found ways to prove a lot of people wrong about what was available in Texas in terms of just simply working hard and getting folks to the polls. I want to talk to you a little bit about why it is that for the last 50 years or so, or particularly since the 1940s, that you had folks like Sam Rayburn and you had guys like Lyndon Johnson, you had guys like Jim Wright and Olin Teague and all of these old congressmen that really understood what being a Democrat was about. Because they believed, they hadn't focused much on social issues and things like that, but they knew that it the same thing that Bill Clinton knew. It's the economy, stupid. And they practiced that from the 1940s or from the Great Depression on to the 1970s when it was taken away from them. And the principal difference between their party and the Republican Party during that time was not anything sinister, but it was a belief system that the two had that were very different. The Republicans during that time believed, and they would tell you straight to your face, they weren't cynical about it, that the way that you build this economy, the way you keep Ford and General Motors and General Electric prosperous, which we all want to do, they believed that you did that by giving the tax breaks to the investors of General Motors, of General Electric, investors of Ford, that you gave the tax breaks to the company itself, and you gave the tax breaks to the executive of that company. Those things that came from government should go to those folks that were taking the chances, and it would somehow trickle down to everybody else. It's just a belief system that they had, which has now been proven wrong. What Sam Rayburn and all of those folks believed was that it doesn't do any good to give huge tax breaks to General Electric or its investors. It doesn't do any good to give huge tax breaks to Ford Motor Company or its investors if there ain't nobody can afford a Ford F-150 or a washing machine. And that is the core of what the Democratic Party has always been about. The economics of being a Democrat is working families, working families, working families.
Yes.
And if those folks had money and those folks were taken care of, then the Ford Motor Companies and the General Electric and everybody else was going to be taken care of too. And so what happened when the government, Democrats and Republicans, by the way, veered away from that and started giving the tax breaks and the things like that to folks that weren't working families? What happened in the last 10 years or so, particularly in the last two, when all of a sudden those working families ran out of money and couldn't buy the Ford F-150s and couldn't buy the General Motors cars and couldn't buy? We see what happened. And what happened was a cratering of the economy, the likes of which we haven't seen since the Great Depression, caused by that philosophy being changed. And so in order to bring that philosophy back, we've got to focus on those folks, working families, working families, working families. Go to bed every night thinking about working families, working families. How do you get cash into their hands? How do you make it easier for their children to go to college? How do you make it easier for them to live their life and be able to participate in this society? And that's what happened in this process. Now, it's going to be a while before I can stand up here now or as a United States Senator and tell you, boy, I've got this great program and this great program, because we've got big trouble, in case you haven't noticed. We have put $1 trillion into the economy to try to spur it back, but sooner or later, that trillion has got to be removed. It has to be. Every economist knows it has to be, or the dollars you have in your pocket are going to be worth nothing. When the time comes to remove that from the budget, there better be some folks in the United States Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives that are sensitive to working families and people that are on the brink or people that are in need. Because if the wrong folks are in charge and safety nets are destroyed and pulled away in order to pull that $1 trillion out of the budget, then we're going to be in the same mix that we were in before. It has to be done with compassion, and it has to be done with common sense. Now, when I was Comptroller of Public Accounts, and some folks here are maybe born at the time I was Comptroller of Public Accounts, I don't know. I would like to point out I am the youngest person in this race, so you just got a whole slate of geezers in this deal. But I want you to know that I never ran for office because I wanted to hold the office. I always had something better to do than that. When I was a railroad commissioner, I was the first commissioner to say the future is natural gas in Texas. It is not oil. I put Clady Williams and the Midland oil guys with Joseph Kennedy in the darndest situation you have ever seen, and had those folks together start using natural gas to clean up the environment and make money for all parties, including the folks in Boston, including the folks in Midland. When I was a Comptroller of Public Accounts, the first day that I was there, we had a crisis. The Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Bob Bullock, stood up and said, "We are so far in the hole that we have to have an income tax." Had a press conference at the Governor's Mansion, called for the imposition of an income tax in 1991. We thought we had a better idea. We thought that we could come up with a mechanism and find some savings in government. And until that time, I believe you had two philosophies. You had one, slash and burn. And the other one, we can't find any savings. What we did, using the Texas Performance Review, which was later copied, and we built this for Al Gore when he was there, which became the National Performance Review, what we built was a way that we thought was a third way, a way to lower the amount of money that you spent without affecting the services that people had. And we found thousands of ways to do that, perhaps the most prominent of which had to do with the food stamp program. Half the people in this room don't even remember what food stamps were, but we used to actually have them in Texas, and now we have a little electronic card called the Lone Star Card, which came from the Comptroller's Office and came from our work at that time. And think about, and we saved hundreds of millions of dollars and didn't kick a single person off the food stamp program. When I was in high school, and many people here in high school, every day you heard somebody complaining about the food stamp program and the fraud in the food stamp program. I suggest that none of you have heard that in 2 years. And the reason is because we changed the system. We put dignity back into the system, and we change the system. We no longer pay some guy in New York City $80 million a year for the privilege of printing food stamps and sending them to us. That guy fought what we did tooth and nail, hired every lobbyist he could. We no longer pay some company in Missouri $30 million a year to physically haul the food stamps around in armored cars. We don't pay for distribution centers. We don't pay for any of that kind of stuff. It just moves through the air. The day that we started this in Houston was our kind of a guinea pig city. We started in Houston, and all of a sudden somebody said, we think 2 million people have left the food stamp program. And I said, well, that's been nice. My political career is over with. We somehow kicked 2 million people off the rolls. The next day, we didn't hear any complaints. Next day, no complaints. A week later, no complaints. And we go back in to find out what was the matter. And what happened was, is the reason those 2 million people didn't complain is because they were dead. And it's difficult for dead people to complain. Think of this. It's common sense. Nobody thought of it. When somebody dies, you probably don't pick up the phone right at the funeral and say, oh, by the way, quit sending those food stamp authorization forms to this address. It doesn't exist. And so they kept going and wound up being able to help a lot more people. The point is that when the time comes in the United States Senate to make those decisions, we need to make those decisions in ways that don't kill people, in ways that make common sense, in ways that save a lot of money in the process. But make those tough decisions, we certainly are going to have to do. Now let me point this out to you. The United States Senate, as is all of Washington, D.C., is a very partisan place. I'm not particularly crazy about that in government, in operation of government, but it is, and it is something you need to live with. When the Republicans are in charge, Democrats don't get to participate. When Democrats are in charge, Republicans don't get to participate. And I want you to think about this, and I think it's something that all Texans ought to think about. When today, in the United States Senate, there is a meeting about NASA, or there is a meeting about MD Anderson, or there is a meeting about a Texas highway project, or they're talking about the funding for Fort Hood, or they're talking about funding for all the military bases in San Antonio, or whatever, there is nobody in the room from Texas. Regardless of what you think of John Cornyn and Kay Hutchison, they ain't invited to that meeting. And so that commanding officer of Fort Hood is calling somebody in Michigan to find out what his chances are of getting an appropriation. And that head of MD Anderson is trying to find out whether they have a research grant that went through, or UT, University of Texas. They don't call a Texan to find that out. They have to call somebody in California or whoever they built relations with. Three people, John Tower, Lloyd Benson, and Lyndon Johnson, all at one time in their careers said, it is in Texas' interest to have one Democrat and one Republican in the United States Senate. And that is something that I think most clear-thinking Texans can understand. Now, if I have convinced you, and I suspect many of you were convinced before you came in, that you ought to have a Democrat, let me try to convince you that this is the one you ought to have. Am I? What? I couldn't hear. But anyway, my sister's in the room. But anyway, let me try to convince you of this. They have, my opponent says to people, said, we need a fresh face. This sharp guy's been around a while. Let me just point something out to you. In 1998, when I ran against Governor Goodhair, the poll showed that Democrats were at an 18-point disadvantage. A generic Democrat versus a generic Republican, that Democrat was 18 points behind. I came within 1 point of beating him. Yeah. Everybody else was there. Everybody else, including my good friend Gary Morrow, was that 18 to 20 points behind. But we were right there. And the reason was is because independents stuck with us the whole time. The same thing happened in 2002. In 2002, we were at a 17-point disadvantage, came within 2 points of that. I used to believe the stuff about we need a fresh face in order to do it. I went out and recruited these fresh faces, the mayor of Dallas, a whole bunch of folks. And they got beat, many points worse than I did. And the problem with that situation is that when you are running, if you're the mayor of Dallas or the mayor of Troboken or wherever, and you're running against somebody that has run in 254 counties in this state, and you got maybe 37 days to get this together, you got a world of hurt on your hands. That's how fast this election can be. When Kay Hutchison quits, if Rick Perry wants to, he can declare it vacant at that time, call the election within 37 days to 127 days, and have that election there.
Wow.
If you have never been put your name on the ballot in 254 counties, I can assure you this is a big old state, and you don't have time to get there from here. What we can do, we have an excellent opportunity, one that comes around in a generation, and that is an excellent opportunity for common sense Texans who consider themselves independents along with Democrats and moderate Republicans to know that it is in Texas' interest to elect a Democrat to the United States Senate. And if you're going to elect a Democrat to the United States Senate, the one that you're going to elect is the one that has the history of getting independent votes, the likes of which have never been done in 15 to 20 years by any other Democrat. No Democrat on the statewide ballot has achieved the electoral numbers that I have in at least the last 15 years or so. And so one of the things that I want you to do is I want to recruit you. I want you to go to work for me. I want you to be on my website. So every organization that has endorsed so far has endorsed me, including this week was the Hispanic County Judges and Commissioners Association meeting in the Rio Grande Valley. We've got great crowds from one end of Texas to the other, including at the Coalition of Black Democrats meeting in Corsicana this last week. This is about what Texas can be. And if you want to make a real difference in what the politics of Texas is about, and you don't remember what it was like when Lloyd Benson walked in a room as a senator, it made an amazing difference. When Lloyd Benson, the last time we had one really great year was 1982. And I want to tell you about 1982 since a lot of you weren't alive in 1982. But in 1982, Lloyd Benson was the United States Senator from Texas. The Republicans made a terrible mistake. They ran a guy from Dallas, a congressman named Collins, against him. Benson took that kind of personally. And he went out and produced the biggest get-out-the-vote program that anybody had ever seen. And this guy named Mark White, which everybody thought was going to lose to Bill Clemens, became governor the next morning. Sarcastic, wild woman named Ann Richards, who nobody gave a chance to win, all of a sudden became treasurer of the state of Texas. Gary Marr became land commissioner. Jim Hightower became agriculture commissioner. And every single one of them had one thing in common. They knew they were there because of what Lloyd Benson was able to do, cutting across party lines, amassing the money, and making sure that the vote was there. At 1 o'clock in the afternoon on that election day, they ran out of ballots in the Democratic Party of Houston. Had to start Xeroxing ballots in order to get the people to the polls. That's what a United States senator can do. If a United States senator is willing to do it for its party. But if you have a person who believes that while they're serving, they're nonpartisan, as Richard Morrison would describe him, and somebody who hosted a fundraiser for Tom DeLay, then you got real problems in trying to use that senator to try to further the goals that everybody in this room has. And so I want your vote, I want your support, and I'm going to leave you with one last thing. I mentioned to you before, in the way in the world I can come to you and say, boy, we got these great new programs to do, but when we heal this country, there is one thing I want to do. Let me tell you what it is. It has to do with education. When I graduated from high school, Bloomington High School, the penalty for not going to college pretty much was death, because you got to go to Vietnam. And in fact, like many people in this room that graduated in 1968, a whole bunch of mine and Buddy Breivogel's classmates were dead in the fields in Vietnam. Close to a third of those kids by the time the first 18 months were over with. There was no difference between me and those kids, or from Buddy and those kids. They were all just as smart as we were. Here is the difference. The difference was is that my mama wrapped me in an Aggie sweatshirt when I was, maybe she had bad taste, but she wrapped me in an Aggie sweatshirt when I was 3 years old. And she talked to me about going to A&M. It wasn't even an option. She talked to me about going to college. And those kids' parents didn't do that. And the reason they didn't do that is they didn't know they could make a promise like that, because they didn't know if they could keep the promise. And so they didn't talk about it. We've got to make sure they can talk about it. And here's the way we do it. What we do is we reenact what the GI Bill did. I am convinced that from the 1940s to the 1970s, a big part of that growth that occurred in the United States of America was that hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people getting college degrees after coming back from World War II and creating the jobs, technology and otherwise, that resulted from that. That's what we ought to say to every kid in this country. We ought to say, look, if you will give us a couple of years in the Peace Corps, in your local hospital, in something authorized by the country, as charitable work, then we'll give you a college degree. Yeah. Whether that degree... Whether that degree is at Texas A&M or some lesser school is not a point of discussion. And if those parents can say to that three-year-old at that time and have the conversations that many of your parents had with you at that particular time, I think we'll produce something that'll just knock the socks off of what this country can be. And that is, not every child is going to get a college degree, but they can sure go past high school and technical school. And there is no doubt that high school is not good enough anymore for any child in this state. Thank you very much for giving me a chance to do this.